And now, a Sound Off exclusive. Audio footage from Gorilla Position at the Greatest Royal Rumble. Get the entrance, Kevin.
And the leader of Titus, plural wide, Titus O'Neil.
Get the camera too, aisle cam. Okay.
Many princes and very
now get ready.
And he just,
get brought. Wait, what happened? What happened? I think he went, Kevin, I think he went under the ring. Quick, I think he may have come out the other side. Where is he? Oh, Kevin, get the replay, damn it. Kevin.
Oh my God, here's the replay. Titus O'Neil trying to get into the ring. And Titus O'Neil tripped.
You got to play it again. You got to play it again, Kevin. Go. Go.
Titus is ticked off now. Oh, my God.
Cole, this may be the greatest moment in Royal Rumble history.
That may be the greatest moment in Royal Rumble history.
No, ever.
Really
ever.
The greatest moment ever. I'm trying to hold it together. Titus had a baby.
Dan Matha. Who's that?
Is on the way.
Oh, all right. Quick. Quick. Cut the entrance. Rerun the replay.
Take another look.
Forget about Ray.
Rumble history. Say what you want about Ray lasted 62 minutes and Shawn Michaels going wire to wire to win and Daniel Bryan's performance tonight. That may be
this is better than Daniel Bryan tonight. That's for damn sure. Forget about Stone Cold.
He's trapped there. Maybe he thought that Stone Cold Steve Austin won 3 Royal Rumbles.
Top that Stone Cold.
Daniel Bryan.
Ah, this is great. I'm a genius.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client.
Mama Monster.
Conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Fat delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
I've been sitting here trying to figure out who would be the most appropriate person to induct Titus O'Neil into the WWE Hall of Fame next year when he takes his rightful spot. Now, his induction video will be nothing except that clip of him sliding under the ring at the Greatest Royal Rumble. You don't really have to show anything else in the video. Just show that on a loop. And, maybe they can get Batista. Batista's a big Titus supporter. He's a big friend and fan of Titus O'Neil's work. I'm actually going to be talking about Batista. He was in the news a little bit this week. Very odd, the way that he is getting the cold shoulder from WWE, and he made some very interesting comments on the radio, which I'm going to talk about in the mailbag a little bit later. This is episode 545 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, April 29th, 2018. I am the Solid Monster. Going to be doing the show a little bit differently this week because aside from the event in Saudi Arabia on Friday, which everything was building around, even though they have another pay-per-view coming up a week from today, and since I'm doing those predictions next weekend, I sort of looked at this and I said, you know, there really isn't a whole lot to talk about this week. So what we'll do here, actually I'll run down what the plan is for this week's show here in a little bit. First of all, I want to thank everybody who took advantage of our Audible link offer last week. I mentioned as part of our little Audible spotlight, the book called As You Wish, Inconceivable Tales from the Making of the Princess Bride, which was sort of in the news again, if that's the right way of putting it. After the Andre the Giant documentary, a lot of people were talking about the Rob Reiner movie, one of the best movies ever made. And this is a kind of a behind-the-scenes look at the making of the movie, and they interview most of the actors from it. So you can get the audiobook for free using our link. Instead of paying the $21 or whatever it is, you can use that to cash in on that book. You can cash in on any other number of wrestling books, Daniel Bryan's book, Brock Lesnar's book, Justin Roberts. I mean, there's so many different books that are worth it. Chris Jericho's book. So just use our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. You don't just punch the link in. You got to punch the link in, then sign up. You'll sign up for the 30-day trial. They will not bill you unless you get to day 31, then it kicks in. But if for whatever reason you want to cancel before then, you will not be billed, but you get to keep your book. It's a great deal. Take advantage of it. audibletrial.com/solomonster. Also, check out our store, prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. The new Nutcrackamora shirt is up in all sizes, shipping to all over the world. So that's where you can pick up the new shirt. And if you want to make a PayPal donation, you can always do so on thesolomonster.com. PayPal button's on the right-hand side of the page. That is where it is parked. I mean, that thing hasn't moved. That car's been sitting there for a long time. They put a boot on it. It's always been parked in that same place, right there on the right-hand side of the page. Thank you very much. Everybody who made a donation, any kind of donation, but obviously $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out here on the podcast. Thank you to John Luzcana Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, the Belgian Brute Nicholas Overmeer, the Show-Off Corey Van Dam, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, the Malaysian Mastermind Samuel T, Judge and Jury Justin Girardi, Mentally Unstable Matt Cotter, Trevon the Cannon Clark, the Griller Ray Grit, Gabriel the San Diego Beer Snob Solus, the Renton Road Warrior Taylor Schatt, the Dogs Bollock Sean McLaughlin, Dark Sky Dixon Krasinski, Tyler the Tank Smuskowitz, Chick Magnet CM Edwards, and last but not least here, the Corporate Diamond Danny Jones. You can check out his channel, Team Not Crash, on YouTube, now with over 100 subs. You'll find a lot of content on there, including Let's Plays, podcasts, live stream reactions for WWE pay-per-views. Just go to youtube.com/TeamNotCrash. Thank you again to everybody who made a contribution this week. So this Greatest Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia did take place on Friday. And as I was saying before, you know, when I look back on the rundown for this week, I said, man, you know, there really wasn't a whole lot that happened on TV, on the main shows this week. It was really just a whole bunch of hype for the Saudi Arabia show. Now, some of the key things that, I took away from this week, and there wasn't much, but we did have 10 bell salutes and tribute videos for Bruno Sammartino, which I thought was very classy on WWE's part. They continue to really push Bruno and his passing, and they had that documentary that aired on the network, and just really pushing him as being this influential figure, one of the great, actually, I think they did refer to him as the greatest champion of all time. They say that about, you know, a lot of different people. They've said that about Steve Austin at different points. I've heard Michael Cole, I think, say that about John Cena, that he's the greatest champion of all time. So this week, the narrative is that Bruno is the greatest of all time, but you could certainly make the argument that he is as important as he was to the growth of that company and being champion for as long as he was. So yeah, absolutely. And it was very classy, I think, on their part to pay tribute to him in the way that they did. Now, are they going to do something like they've done with Dusty Rhodes, where they name something after him, whether it be a tournament or some other, you know, like they even named an award after the Ultimate Warrior at the Hall of Fame. So I would suspect at some point we may get some sort of Bruno branding. I just don't know what it would be on, but I think it would be appropriate. SmackDown. The one thing or a couple of things from SmackDown that caught my eye this week, Big Cass came out to be on Miz TV with The Miz, and I thought he acquitted himself very nicely during that segment as far as just his promo and the way he came off during that segment. There's a lot of potential there. You know, there's some question about whether or not he can handle it. You know, he had a lot of success being part of a group with another individual and who did most of the talking. And now he doesn't really have that luxury unless they link him up with someone else. And ironically, I thought it would be The Miz that they would link him up with. That kind of made me sad that it looks like the two of them are not going to be together. Although never say never, it could all just be a swerve. They could very well end up being a pair. But the only knock on Cass I would say about that segment is he looked just ridiculous in that suit with the short sleeves. And you could tell he knew it too, and he was very uncomfortable. It bothered him because he kept pulling on the sleeves. I'm like, dude, just talk to Big Show or something, you know? Like, find yourself a good tailor because you're going to be wearing a lot of these on TV, and you look ridiculous. So I thought Cass came off well, and I love Nakamura's new remixed entrance music. I know there's been some love, there's been a lot of love for it, but there's been some hate. I fall in the love camp. It's look, I know exactly why they're doing it. He's a heel now. They don't want people to cheer for him and sing along with the song, and they found a version of the song that nobody could possibly sing along to because he is a heel, and so it makes sense, but it's still a cool theme. It sort of maintains the original theme, but now it's got this like Japanese rap laid over it, and he's got the music video that they were showing on TV for it. So I'm all in really on heel Nakamura so far, not Cracker Nakamura. And as I said in my review when I talked about the Greatest Rumble, I said, look, you know, they're gonna have to make a move here, because Nakamura is about to get another championship match next Sunday. This will be his third match now with AJ. This will be his fifth attempt to win the WWE title on pay-per-view in the last, I don't know, 8 months or so? Maybe not even? So he either wins it or you move on after Backlash. You move on to AJ and somebody else. And AJ does not have any shortage of people he could be working with on that brand now after the shakeup. But, you know, I've been loving heel Nakamura so much that if he doesn't win, I do kind of fear, well, then what the hell do you do with him? Because it doesn't look like they're doing anything with him and Bryan yet. They will, I'm sure, at some point. I almost think he has to win the championship just to keep this thing going. Now, the only other thing here about TV this week that I wanted to talk about was NXT, what they did with Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. We had Tommaso Ciampa, to no one's surprise, I don't think, attacking Johnny Gargano on NXT this past week. Johnny Gargano was supposed to be challenging Aleister Black for the championship. Gargano was attacked by Ciampa. Ciampa gave him white noise off the stage through a table that had been set up. Just completely destroyed this poor guy. Medics came out. They had to strap him to a gurney. He got stretchered off to a waiting ambulance and driven off. Now, it was interesting, when they took Gargano out to the parking lot to load him up into the ambulance, there were some wrestlers crowding around, and one of the wrestlers was Cassius Ohno, and I did peep that sweet and sour Larry Sweeney shirt that Ohno was wearing as they loaded Gargano into the ambulance. And I couldn't remember when it was that he died, and I looked it up, and it was 7 years ago this month. It was a few weeks ago. It was the seven-year anniversary when Larry Sweeney had taken his own life. And it got me thinking, you know, just imagine where he would be now with the indie scene as strong as it is and flourishing the way that it is. I mean, I would like to think, you know, 7 years later, he'd be working in WWE. I have no doubt at the very least that he would be in NXT right now. You know, that's where he would be. And it's a shame that he's not. But the ambulance drives away, and as it does, the camera pans up to one of the production trucks, and standing on top of the truck, waving, very slowly waving goodbye to Gargano as he's driven off, is Tommaso Ciampa. You talk about the ultimate heel. And so, you know, thinking ahead, okay, clearly there's going to be a rematch between the two of them. When do you do it? What kind of match is it? I mean, it's hard because, you know, the first match, in a lot of ways, you know, you expect the first match to be a straight singles match, and then it builds to a cage or a hardcore or whatever it may be. The first match this time was an unsanctioned street fight. So where do you go from there? To me, the logical place to go would be to bring Hell in a Cell to NXT for the very first time and let these two blow this thing off at TakeOver in Chicago in June. Right? I mean, this is the sort of rivalry that Hell in a Cell, I think, was designed for. And you would think, I mean, the next match could be their last. Maybe it won't be. Maybe it's part of a three-match program that builds to Brooklyn in August. But I think that TakeOver show in June would be a great place to do the first ever Hell in a Cell match at NXT and let these guys go in there and brutalize each other, and may the best man win. I would think Ciampa has to come out on top in that match. Because I don't know that, you know, Gargano, who you know, has been built up as something of an underdog in NXT, I don't know that he should be winning all of these matches. I think at some point you've got to, you know, have Ciampa get a big win, and Chicago probably would be the place for it. So that would be the kind of match I would hope that they would build to, but I have complete faith and trust in the brain trust there at NXT. They've done very well with these guys so far. And I trust that whatever they have up their sleeve, I'm sure it'll be, hopefully it'll be worthy of this feud. Because right now, the most personal sort of feud going in WWE is this program between Gargano and Ciampa. So here's what we're going to do this week. Those are really the only points I wanted to make about TV this week. There was really nothing else that happened of any great note. And I recorded almost an hour on the greatest Royal Rumble event in Saudi Arabia, which I'm going to play here now. For those who have not heard it yet, or if you want to hear it again, I know there are a lot of people that have not heard the review. It did go up as a sound off extra on YouTube, as all of the pay-per-view reviews typically do. And I don't usually do this. Normally these are YouTube exclusive, but I'm going to make an exception this time. I'm going to play the review in full here if you have not heard it. There are some other little news and notes kind of scattered in there, and I talk a little bit about Backlash. I talk about the rumored price tag that the Saudis paid are paying WWE for these events over the next 10 years and how much they paid for this show, supposedly. So there's a lot of little things like that. And there, obviously, I talk about the famous, or is it infamous? I don't know. Titus O'Neil botch. How can I not talk about that? So I'm going to play that review for you now. On the flip side of this review, I'm going to come back and I'm going to answer your mailbag questions. And there's a couple of really good ones in there. There's one actually about the time that there were not one, but two back-to-back riots at WWE live events on consecutive nights, which I'm willing to bet some people at least have never heard about. So I'm going to talk about that. And I'm going to talk about Batista and some very interesting comments he made on a radio show this past week and what his status is going forward with WWE. So this here is my full review and thoughts on the Greatest Royal Rumble show this past Friday in Saudi Arabia. We'll come back on the flip side of this and answer your questions here on the Sound Off. This is your WWE Greatest Royal Rumble review from the King Abdullah International Stadium in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. I am the Solemn Monster. The 1992 Royal Rumble remains safe and sound as the greatest Royal Rumble match of all time, as if that was ever in doubt. This one had its moments, and perhaps the greatest botch that I've ever seen in all of my life by Titus O'Neil. I thought, now, on the Titus, I can't get this Titus thing out of my head, even here the next morning as I record this, but I did think, for a brief moment, that maybe it was a planned comedy spot. This was just, it was too perfect, too good to be true. Maybe it was a planned comedy spot. But then I realized that Titus is not exactly the most graceful person in the world. There ain't no way that he stuck that landing as perfectly as he did by preparing for it. There's just no way. I mean, Titus is a talented guy, but only to a point. He ain't that talented. So I'll talk more about that when I get to the Rumble match itself. But I will say that moment will live on for generations of wrestling fans to come. Long after you and I are gone. This was the night that Titus earned himself a rightful spot in the Hall of Fame. On the whole, the entire show, I thought, was entertaining enough. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably go 6.5, maybe a 7. I wouldn't go higher than that. I say 7 only because in the case of the two world title matches, I thought the WrestleMania rematches that we saw here on this show were actually better than the matches we got between the same people at WrestleMania itself. But the finishes at WrestleMania were far more satisfying. So that was kind of the trade-off here. Better overall matches on this show, I thought, of those championship main events. But those two finishes were really underwhelming. You know, they served a purpose to further, you know, certain storylines. But in a vacuum, they sucked. See what I did there? Anyway, Twitter poll results so far, over 3,500 votes and counting at Solemonster. You can still vote. The poll is open because not everybody is going to watch this show at the same time. 50% thumbs up, 24% thumbs down, 26% of you said you did not watch. Now, I don't usually throw that third option in there. I hate doing that. I feel like it skews these polls, even though everybody always says to me, you got to put a third option in there. You got to put a third option in there. Because Twitter, and this is the fault of Twitter, Twitter will not allow you to see the results of a poll unless you vote. So you're always going to have some people who just vote up or down just so they can see the poll results, and that's stupid. It's not their fault. I mean, Twitter should fix that. But I hate doing that because, you know, if you give people a third option, like a maybe or a so-so or whatever, you give people an out, they're always going to take it. So I like going thumbs up, thumbs down. But in this case, I figured it's only fair because there was this controversy going into the event. Some people were upset about the women thing, and I'm not going to watch. That's what they claimed. And the fact also that the show aired at noon Eastern, when a lot of people were at work or a lot of people were at school. So I just felt like I had to throw it in there. But 50% of you did vote thumbs up on the show, which is still you know, more than thumbs down. Brock Lesnar is still the Universal Champion, and Braun Strowman won the first ever Greatest Royal Rumble match, earning himself a trophy and a green title belt that he'll likely wear on TV this week, and then it will never be seen again. Kind of like those old trophies that you would win. Remember they had the bragging rights pay-per-view and that you would win like a trophy? Raw or SmackDown would win and they'd get this nice big trophy, and maybe it would be on TV that week, and then it would vanish into obscurity. It would vanish into a warehouse somewhere. Strowman was my pick to win the Rumble. It was the right choice, even though I forgot to actually give my prediction when I did the audio last week. It was funny because I realized I wrapped recording on the podcast and I had already converted it. I was about to upload and I'm like, oh God, I forgot to give my prediction for the Rumble match. So I made sure I stuck it in the description. So, people can't say I went back and I just sort of changed my opinion. But Braun was my pick, and it was the right choice. He really is the man on Raw right now. I don't think there could be any doubt about that. Some people might say Seth Rollins, because Rollins is really popular. But to me, Braun is the guy right now. Even if Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns are the ones fighting over the big red belt, Braun is the one with all the momentum, and Braun is the one getting the biggest ovations. And, you know, people seem to be way more into him than they seem to be into those other two. The guy's a superstar, so why not give him a big win here? It doesn't harm anybody. The people who think, well, it's just a throwaway show. Well, okay, so it doesn't, you know, it's not like it harms somebody else, so because Daniel Bryan didn't win or somebody else didn't win. But I do think they could use this, and they can point to this, you know, the biggest Royal Rumble of all time. And before this, Alberto Del Rio had the credit for winning the biggest Royal Rumble of all time, and now that honor goes to Braun Strowman. So it was a nice little win for him here. Brock Lesnar's win is interesting because that brings him that much closer to eclipsing CM Punk's 434-day reign as the WWE champion. I understand these are two different titles. This is the Universal title and that was the WWE title. But the fact remains, right, the key title in the company at the time was the one that Punk had. And the key title in the company right now, clearly the way it's positioned, is Lesnar's belt. And as close as he is getting to eclipsing Punk's record, if he does so, that would make him the longest reigning champion of the modern era in WWE. Now, obviously, this is not counting Okada's run in New Japan. We're going to put that off to the side. Nobody can touch that right now. But if Brock can hold on to that title until June 11th, he will blow past CM Punk, and I'm sure you're going to have conspiracy theorists out there who will argue that, well, that's been the plan all along. That's the only reason Brock has held on for the championship for this long, is to erase CM Punk's record. But I don't buy that. To me, they're not beating Roman Reigns over and over again, just despite CM Punk, who has not even been in the company in about 5 years now, right? 4 or 5 years. But with the win here on the show, it's very likely that we probably will not see Brock defending that Universal title again, I would think, until Money in the Bank at the earliest, which is in mid-June, after that June 11th date. I think it's like a week later. But possibly not even until SummerSlam in August. I mean, we have another pay-per-view next Sunday. Believe it or not, yes, next Sunday is Backlash. And Brock is not on that card. So it looks like that's exactly what's going to happen. You know, we're going to have a new, I guess it's not like the all-time record, but as far as Punk's record, it's about to fall. Now, we also had two finishes for the two main championship matches that felt like cop-outs, and it did bring my score down a bit because I just thought, man, this is really lame. It was actually really frustrating to see not one, but two, basically no contest finishes to these two title matches, but they did serve to advance two different storylines. There were several storylines on this show that saw some progression, including AJ losing his temper with Nakamura, both men getting counted out. That served to continue their feud going into Backlash next weekend. And the finish of the cage match with Reigns and Lesnar, which I'll talk about, serves, I guess, in their mind to create controversy that to me doesn't actually exist, and to give them a reason to just feed Roman another title shot at some point soon. I do feel compelled, just before I get into the matches here, I do feel compelled to defend this show in one way. I want to defend this show from the people I see on my timeline arguing that it was just a waste of time. This was nothing more than a glorified house show. I've seen that sentiment a lot on social media. It's one thing to call it a glorified house show. You can do that. I think that's a fair opinion to have. This was probably the most expensive house show in the history of house shows. But you can argue that. But to be so upset about it, I'm wondering if these are the same people who pissed and moaned when they found out that Starrcade last November wasn't airing on the network. And believe me, there were a lot of people very upset How could they not be airing Starrcade on the network? This is exactly what they have the network for. How come we can't see it? This is not fair. I will bet you at least some of those people at the time were making that argument about Starrcade. Maybe not everybody, but a lot of those people I bet were. These are the types of network specials that I would like to see them do more of. Now, I don't want them to all be 6 hours long, and preferably someplace a little less polarizing the next time would be nice, so it doesn't become a whole big political issue. But taping from unique locations in front of new fans, maybe even some shows at smaller venues, that's something I've long wanted them to be doing more of, ever since the network was first launched. So I think to complain about the show being a waste of time because there were no title changes or because nothing big happened is basically to say don't do specials like this anymore, or like Beast in the East a few years ago, which I really enjoyed. I want to see them do more of that, not less. The Saudis really rolled out the red carpet, though, for WWE. And I got to mention this. Alan, his Twitter handle is Alan_Cheapshot on Twitter. He co-hosts the Letters from Center Stage podcast. And he claims to have a source that confirmed to him that the WWE deal with the Saudis is worth $25 million a year for 10 years. So that's a total of $250 million. Now, if that's even close to accurate, and we should know for sure in a few months because WWE is a publicly traded company, so we'll find out soon enough how much this deal is actually worth. But $25 million a year is a lot of money. I don't know if that's net, gross, or what, but that's probably more than they made off WrestleMania this year. So it's no wonder we had all of that pyro yesterday. We got what used to be a year's worth of pyrotechnics condensed into one night here on this show. And the show opened with Triple H curtain jerking against John Cena. Not the first time that Triple H, in the last few years, has actually opened a big pay-per-view. He did with Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania a few years ago. I thought this was a good choice. You know, you open with a big match, two big names. Triple H had his WrestleMania-esque entrance with the green lasers, and Cena came out flanked by a bunch of Saudi kids wearing his merch. They worked, I would say, about the safest, most basic match you could possibly think of. Although, Triple H did work in his trademark Harley Race bump out over the top. That's his signature. Cena went for an AA, actually multiple times. Triple H countered with a pedigree for a near fall. I don't want to get into the weeds on this. You guys don't need a blow-by-blow from me. Cena deadlifted him at one point out of a crossface into an AA. Then he hit a slingshot in the corner, one final AA, and got the pin. I thought this was perfectly fine, save for Michael Cole, who did not have a good night. Michael Cole claimed that John Cena had once beaten Triple H to win the WWE Championship at WrestleMania. And I thought to myself, really? I don't really remember that happening. I remember them having a match at WrestleMania in Chicago, but John Cena was the champion going into that match. So he actually retained the title that night. And I was thinking, I know that the rumor is that they were going to wrestle the next year, but they didn't. I'm like, what is this phantom match that Michael Cole is referring to? And obviously it doesn't exist. He messed up. Which, look, it happens, right? He's not perfect. People mess up. JR messes up. Everybody messes up. Then, during the SmackDown Tag Team title match later on, Michael Cole killed Sergeant Slaughter. Eric Rowan was giving Jey Uso a noogie, which Cole said was a move made popular by the late, great Sergeant Slaughter. Which, imagine if you're Sergeant Slaughter, or his family, sitting at home watching this show, only to find out that Michael Cole killed you off. Now, Cole did apologize later on for it. All that, though, okay, those two things, and I think there was one other screw-up that he made, all that on the same show where he, Michael Cole, of all people, of all the nights to do it, went after, I think it was Byron Saxton at one point, for not doing his research. For the record, Sergeant Slaughter is very much alive. And I think he's going to have a word with Michael Cole the next time he sees him. Cedric Alexander and Kalisto for the Cruiserweight Championship. I thought this was a great match. Really good night for Kalisto in particular. You know, we've seen this guy botch things left and right, and sometimes just things don't go his way. But the guy was on his A game on this show. Didn't have a lot of heat, but he nailed a springboard Spanish fly on Cedric Alexander off the top rope in this match. That has to be seen to be believed. That was one of the spots of the night. And then later he went for the Salida del Sol, but Cedric countered it into a nasty-looking lumbar check for the win. Great stuff. I thought this was great. We had Woken Matt and Woken Wyatt beating Sheamus and Cesaro to claim the vacant Raw Tag Team titles as their own in the most predictable match of the night, given that the bar is now on SmackDown. We all knew how this one was ending. I thought this was average. Yeah, it was an average match. Bray wiped out Sheamus with Sister Abigail, followed by the assisted twist of fate, I guess an elevated twist of fate, you would call it, for the win. So Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy are now both champions, although on separate brands, which leads me to the next match. Jeff Hardy and Jinder Mahal for the United States Championship. All you need to know about this match is that Jeff Hardy went for a whisper in the wind. He totally missed Jinder. Maybe he saw a ghost, I don't know. But he missed Jinder, and he crashed to the mat. Now, it's not Jeff's fault. When Jeff is throwing his body and twisting his body in the air like that, you got to be in position. Jinder was out of position. Which again, look, it happens. It's bad enough that Jinder Mahal was out of position and made Jeff Hardy look like an idiot. The man who held the WWE title for 6 months last year and was put over people like Randy Orton and Shinsuke Nakamura multiple times, he sold for this whisper in the wind anyway like he had been hit. And he fell to the mat like he had been shot. Either that or the force of Jeff Hardy hitting the mat shook the ring like an earthquake and caused him to fall flat on his back. This was Jackie Gata level horrible stuff. That this is the man who held the WWE Championship for 6 months last year is a disgrace. He tried for the Colossus. Hardy escaped, hit the Swanton Bomb for the win. Once Jeff retained here, the outcome of the ladder match was really never in doubt as far as the IC title staying on Raw. It was really just a matter of would it be Rollins, would it be Balor. That's the risky run. When you do a superstar shakeup and then 2 weeks later you have a big pay-per-view like this, and then you have another pay-per-view next weekend where we now have more matches with Raw guys against SmackDown guys. Which I thought we were told, hey, you know, we can't see that any other night of the year other than Survivor Series. I guess they lied to us. At this point, we had basically what amounted, it was about a 10 to 15 minute intermission. I assume this was that prayer period that I read about that they were going to have for the live people in the building. So what they did was they sent Byron Saxton up to where the kickoff panel was. They had Jerry the King Lawler in his full king garb from the old days. They had Jim Ross. They had Booker T. To basically, so Saxton was sent up there to basically lead the panel. He was there to MC the whole thing. And if you ever need a reminder as to the value of someone like a Renee Young, watch this segment, because this came off as some of the cringiest crap that you will ever see. Lawler was doing his usual shilling where you don't believe a word. Not only do you not believe a word he says, but you don't believe that he believes a word that he's saying. But he's getting a paycheck, so he'll say whatever they want him to say. JR was JR. He didn't really have much to say. He was just sort of there. But Booker T looked like he was high as a kite during this entire segment. He couldn't say more than four words without busting out laughing. Booker was the second most entertaining part of this entire segment. The first was Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho did a backstage promo with Tom, better known to the rest of the world as Mike Rome. Jericho, I thought, was great here. He was talking about how happy he was and how excited he was to be back after 7 months away. He name-dropped all the big names that are in the greatest Royal Rumble match with him, and he very sarcastically included the great Mojo Rawley among all the names in the Rumble match. And I gotta say, you know, I was disappointed when they didn't do a spot with the two of them later on. How do you not have Chris Jericho do a spot where he, like, pretends to be all excited to be in the ring with Mojo Rawley, and maybe they're working together, and then Jericho hits a code breaker and then dumps him out of the ring? How hard would that have been? Nobody in the crowd would have gotten it, because I guess they didn't even see this. They didn't play any of the video or the audio of these promos in front of the live crowd, which is why Jericho's jokes were met with silence. But I think it would have been a funny spot for the rest of the audience. The Bludgeon Brothers beat the Usos to retain the SmackDown Tag Team titles. Luke Harper has really leaned out lately. That was my great observation from this match, because there really wasn't much else to it. Him and Rowan hit their double-team powerbomb finish on Jey Uso for the win. Not a whole lot to say. Basic match, nothing really exciting about it. The complete opposite of the next match, which was Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, without his rainbow-colored gear. I guess the Balor Club is not for everyone, at least not in Saudi Arabia. Samoa Joe and The Miz in a fatal four-way ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship. Great match. Probably the best match, not even probably the best match on the entire show. And one of the best ladder match finishes that I think I've ever seen. And one of the most sensible ladder match finishes that in that we didn't have the usual, everyone is struggling to climb and take forever to win. Balor was climbing the ladder. I'll just skip to the end here. Balor was climbing the ladder. Seth Rollins is nowhere to be seen. He's outside the ring. So he's out on the apron. He hits a springboard from the top rope, lands on the ladder. And we've seen people do this spot before. Shelton Benjamin being the first person that sticks out to me. But it's always cool when somebody nails that landing and the ladder doesn't tip over. But Rollins just comes, you know, out of camera view from out of nowhere. He springboards off the top rope, he lands on the ladder, and he very quickly scurries up the ladder, unhooks the title, and wins the match. Seth Rollins, he don't have no time for Balor's bullshit. Stole it right out from under him, and Finn just couldn't believe it. And he also had a nasty gash above his eye. He was bleeding like crazy. But just a fantastic finish, and Joe also, and Miz, I mean, they did, you know, the Tower of Doom spot, and you know, a lot of the spots that you would expect in a match like this. Although I think they may have only used the one ladder for the entire, which if they did, I mean, I wasn't paying that much attention. I don't know if they did or not, but they may have only used the one ladder for the entire match, which if they did is actually pretty impressive all by itself. But just a fantastic finish. They showed a replay where all you see is Balor on the ladder, and Rollins just comes from out of nowhere like Spider-Man and just doesn't waste any time, grabs his belt and wins. So I thought it was perfect. I loved that. The rest of the match was quite good as well. So we had a segment, a little break in the show, but a good segment for the local audience, where they introduced us in the ring to four wrestlers from the tryouts that WWE held in Saudi Arabia. The names were Nasser, Hussein, Mansoor, and Faisal. And they were in the ring cutting, you know, brief, I say cutting promos. I mean, they had a little bit of mic time, each guy did. When all of a sudden they were interrupted by the Daivari brothers, Arya Daivari from 205 Live, and Sean Daivari, who we have not seen in WWE in many years, going back all the way, of course, to when he debuted as part of the package with Muhammad Hassan. And Daivari far outlasted Hassan in WWE, but that's really, I think, the role he's most well known for. That, and I think subduing a miscreant on the New York City subway once. So the Daivari brothers come out. They're waving the Iranian flag, which is a big no-no over there in Saudi Arabia. And so that got mega heat. And Arya cut a promo on all four guys, and he was calling them wannabes. And then, you know, Sean Daivari got on the mic, and he got shoved on his ass. And I think it was Hussein hit a power slam on Sean. Well, see, each guy took turns getting their licks in. And, you know, the crowd was really up and down for most of the show. And I saw a lot of complaints also about, oh, this crowd sucks. This crowd is dead. It was in parts, and maybe it was because I was watching with a few other people, so I wasn't, you know, glued to the TV listening to every pin drop in the frickin' building. So to me, it didn't really come across as any more of a dead crowd than you would find on a typical Monday Night Raw. And they actually came very much alive during certain parts of the show. This was the one part of the show where they just came alive more than anything else. They ate this thing up. They booed the hell out of the Daivaris with the whole Iranian thing, and then they went nuts for these four guys when, you know, they each had their time to shine. And I thought it was really smart of them to include this segment in the show, because not only did it get the biggest reaction of anything on the entire show, but it made those four guys look like stars. I mean, if they did a segment like that in this country, and we've seen stuff like this before, they used to trot out the tough enough guys sometimes, you know, and they would usually try to keep, like, Steve Austin in the ring with them to make sure people didn't boo them. But if they did a segment like that in this country, if they didn't get booed out of the building, they would have been heckled with what chants on the mic. It was actually nice for a change to not have some of the dumb chants in the beach balls. AJ Styles, speaking of balls, we had Nutcracker Nakamura challenging AJ Styles for the WWE Championship. I thought this was better than their WrestleMania match, and their WrestleMania match was good. I thought this was very good. I really liked this match, despite the lame finish, which I at least understood why they did it. Styles went for the phenomenal forearm. Nakamura moved out of the way. AJ almost hit the referee, but stopped short. But in those few seconds with the referee distracted, Nakamura saw an opening, and he hit his signature ball-busting low blow, rolled up AJ, but AJ grabbed the bottom rope, broke up the pin. So now the action spills out of the ring. AJ tackles Nakamura over one of the announce tables. He just lost his temper here. He threw Nakamura into the barricade. He's beating the crap out of him. Both guys get counted out. A double countout in a WWE title match on pay-per-view. Normally that would be infuriating, but this was, you know, this was just a means to an end, right? This was to set up their match at Backlash. They're having another match next Sunday. The finish made sense if they weren't going to take the title off AJ, but the thing with Nakamura is, Nakamura now has had four chances at the WWE Championship on pay-per-view dating back to last August, twice against Jinder Mahal and now twice against AJ Styles, and he has yet to win the big one. He has fallen short all four times, and so now he may well win the championship at Backlash. I'm going to wait until next weekend on the podcast to do my predictions, but he could very well win that title next Sunday. But that would be lucky number five. And it reminds me of Batista. Actually, it reminds me of Roman Reigns right now. But it reminds me of Batista in 2006, 2007, I want to say. How many title shots did it take? It was to the point where people were actively making fun of it. How many title shots did it take before this guy finally won back that World Heavyweight title? It was absurd. It's like, yeah, if you keep feeding somebody title shots, is it really that impressive if you get to match six and they finally win? Like, what are you looking to accomplish when you drag something out like that for so long? I think there was a stretch where Edge beat Batista on pay-per-view like three or four straight times, and he still got another title shot. So they either need to flip the title of Backlash or move on. There's plenty of new faces now after that shakeup on SmackDown for AJ to mix it up with. Me, I can go either way. I'm loving Nutcracker Nakamura has been very entertaining to me so far. So if they want to put the championship on him, I'm all on board. But if they want to keep the belt on AJ, I'm fine with that too. We have The Undertaker against Rusev in a casket match. This was Undertaker's first casket match, we were told, in nearly a decade. Survivor Series 2008, when he beat Big Show, was the last time we saw him in a casket match. This was Undertaker's greatest hits. He played his greatest hits just like he did at WrestleMania, only this went longer. And Rusev, unlike John Cena, actually got some offense in. Undertaker, I thought, looked good for the time that he was in there. I can't knock it. He looked good. Choke slammed Rusev, rolled him into the casket. Aiden English came in before he could slam the lid shut, so Undertaker gave him a choke slam and a pretty vicious-looking tombstone. Apparently he's fine, he's okay, but he looked like he spiked this guy legit right on top of his head. He rolled Aiden into the casket right next to Rusev and shut the lid to win the match. And so I guess it's see you next year, because I don't think there's anybody in the world who believes after this that a casket match against Rusev is going to be the final match of The Undertaker's career. So really, it's just a matter of who they decide to match him up with in New Jersey next year at WrestleMania. I have to say, I do envy the man. I do envy The Undertaker in that I have not seen his pay stubs or anything like that, but I'm almost certain that if Undertaker was a degenerate gambler who pissed away all of his savings at the craps table, that he would be able to retire just off the money he made in the month of April alone. What do you think this guy pulled for that John Cena match at WrestleMania and the match here? Especially with all the money the Saudis are probably probably paid for this show. What do you think? Because I was having a conversation with a couple of people last night about this, and I said, it's got to be at least $1 million for both matches. Not like each match, but just combined. This guy had to pull in at least $1 million this month. Easy. There's no way it's less than that. It's not bad. Not bad for two matches in less than a month. No wonder the guy sticks around. Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship inside a steel cage. Much like AJ and Nakamura, which was a better match than this, I thought this was better than the match that Lesnar and Reigns had at WrestleMania. This was shorter. But look, I'll always take a shorter, more action-packed match than a longer, boring match. And so this was better, I thought, than that, but that's not saying much. Because both matches, really, were basically, here's the formula, okay? Formula is F5, super, oh, I'm sorry, let me go back. German suplex, F5, Superman punch, spear, spear, Superman punch, F5, Superman punch. It's like I'm back at the arcades as a kid, watching people spam the controls. I laughed out loud, though, when Roman came out and I heard boos. Not even 7,000 miles around the world can this guy get anything close to like a big babyface reaction. It's just not happening. Paul Heyman was there. He slammed the cage door on Roman's head at one point when he tried to escape. He slid a chair into the ring to Brock. He went to use it. Reigns, though, hit another spear. So Brock drops the chair. Roman picks it up. He starts battering Lesnar with chair shots, followed by yet another Superman punch. And then came the final spear, which sent both guys crashing through the cage panel to the floor. I mean, you saw, one of the cool things about this was that on the replay, the super slow-mo replay they showed, you could see the nuts and bolts, like, shattering and flying into the air as they busted through this cage. So, they bust through the panel, and I gotta say, that was a rough landing for both these guys. Lesnar fell down hard to the floor. Roman looked like he DDT'd himself, spiked his own head straight down. That looked like it sucked. The finish was interesting. The finish was interesting in this way. Roman's feet clearly touched the floor first. Okay, if you say otherwise, I don't know what you were watching. His feet clearly hit the floor first. Brock Lesnar was laying on top of the mesh panel. He wasn't actually laying on the ground, nor were his feet. But they declared him the winner anyway. And he retained the championship. Thus proving Samoa Joe right, by the way, that Roman Reigns really is a loser. On the one hand, it gives Roman a legitimate reason this time to ask for a rematch, because he really did get screwed. If you watch the footage, he won this match. He should be the champion right now. And I see people debating, well, Lesnar's entire body hit the ground first, and so technically that counts. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Greg Hamilton wasn't speaking Arabic when he made the match announcements. He was speaking plain English before the match. He said the only way to win is by pinfall, submission, or by escaping the cage with both feet hitting the floor. Those were his exact words. As obvious as it was that Roman's feet hit first, I mean, they didn't even try to hide it. They showed half a dozen different replays of it. They showed slow motion replays of it. For that reason, this just came off to me as goofy. And the problem is, like, how many people even want to see another rematch at this point between these two? Brock has beaten this man fair and square 2 straight times in the same month. Roman Reigns has fallen short so many times now, he is damaged goods. So either Vince McMahon finally has come around to the realization that a lot of people really just don't like this guy, or he's too stupid to realize how badly he's sabotaging him. Because if the idea is to get sympathy for him back in the States, good luck with that. Good luck with that. Brock Lesnar pinned Roman Reigns clean in the 4-way at SummerSlam. He pinned Roman Reigns clean 1-on-1 at WrestleMania. And by virtue of the rules, he beat him cleanly in the cage match. So explain to me why he would get another title shot? Now, I know exactly what they'll probably do here. They'll build this up like there's all this controversy around the finish, but there really isn't. There really is nothing controversial about it at all. I mean, now, yes, they can explain Roman getting another title shot. They really couldn't before. I was kind of scratching my head as to why he even got this match. Now they actually have a reason to give him a rematch, because there's no controversy here. His feet touched. He should have won. But the guy is a loser. He's been booked like a loser. And I think he should move to the back of the line. It's time to move on. It's time to find somebody else, because he is damaged goods at this point. And then it was time for the 50-man Greatest Royal Rumble match. They went with 90-second intervals. I thought for sure they would do 60, but they did not, or at least they claimed they were doing 90. I didn't time it each time. Which has to make this, I would imagine, the longest Royal Rumble match of all time, at least televised anyway. I mean, I think this fell just short of 90 minutes, right? About 80 minutes, maybe? I can't think of another Rumble match on television that ever went that long. I know they've done some Rumbles as, like, gimmicks going back even to the 90s on house shows. So I can't sit here and say for sure there's never been one longer, but if there is, I'm not aware of it. I thought the real problem with this match was too much filler. And it's the nature of having 50 spots to fill, I get that, but there were far too many scrubs in this match. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. That's what they are, that's what they were. I really wish they would have booted even half of those lower card guys and just allowed some of the big names from earlier in the card to come back out and participate in the Rumble match itself. So, for example, having Miz be the one to dump Daniel Bryan out right at the very end of the match would have been tremendous. But Cass has the match next Sunday at the pay-per-view, and so I get why they did that. But, you know, John Cena came out in the opening match, got an easy win. You know, I'm sure he was in the back, just kind of milling around. I feel like, you know, it would have been a lot better. Because one of the things that I've enjoyed about some of the Rumbles in the last couple of years, the one in San Antonio, and I think even the one this year, is that you have, you know, when you have a lot of star power, when you have a lot of names in these matches, it generally tends to make them more exciting. Or if, you know, if you have this cluster of four or five big names that's left at the very end, it creates doubt as far as who's going to win and doesn't make it so obvious. And they really didn't do that here. There were no real surprises outside of Hornswoggle. Some sumo wrestler named Hiroki Sumi was in there for about a minute before being dumped out by Mark Henry. They wanted to, I guess, show off Henry's strength by dumping him out of the ring. That was a waste. Roderick Strong from the Undisputed Era in NXT, he was in there. He beat Daniel Bryan's chest just to dog meat with those knife-edge chops. I do not envy Bryan, you know, like waking up in the morning and having to shower with his chest looking the way that it did. Tucker Knight of Heavy Machinery was there. He was brought in, I guess, to help with the Saudi tryouts, and so they let him have a spot in the Rumble match. I was very disappointed that we didn't get to see Otis, his partner. He's the one I was really looking for. We also got Dan Maetha, who has not been seen since Samoa Joe beat the snot out of him once on NXT after weeks of video packages touting Dan Maetha is coming. Dan Maetha's debut in 2 weeks. Dan Maetha's coming next week. All they did in these videos, by the way, was zoom in as close as they possibly could on his disgusting back knee. That's like the only main thing I remember about that was just those disgusting videos where they just zoomed in on his chest and they zoomed in on his back and it was like, ugh, you should at least put a warning up before you do something like that. But then he was beaten up by Samoa Joe when he came out for his debut, and he was never heard from again, until now. So we had him in the Rumble match, and then we had Babatunde, I believe is how you pronounce it, right? Babatunde Ayegbusi, who is signed with NXT. He's been signed for a couple of years now. He once played, he had a cup of coffee with the Minnesota Vikings, apparently. He's also 6'10", so he's a big boy. He was in there, as was Maetha, really just to be dumped out. There were warm bodies in there just to be dumped out by Braun Strowman. They were running up the record for Braun for most eliminations. So that was the purpose they served being in there. Still, you talk about scraping the bottom of the barrel for this match. I mean, come on. Dan Maetha, are you kidding me? It's the best you can do. Speaking of Hornswoggle, he was never eliminated. That's my other issue with this. Hornswoggle was never eliminated. Neither was Shane McMahon. Which logically only means one thing. We have to have a three-way on TV this week. It's got to be Shane McMahon, Hornswoggle, and Braun Strowman. Hornswoggle went through the ropes at one point to try to climb up to do the tadpole splash, and he got kicked off the apron and landed on the floor. He never actually went out over the top rope. And Shane went under the bottom rope. He was laying on the apron for about 10 minutes, and at that point, he climbed up top. That was when Strowman caught him, and he threw Shane to his death through the announce table, which was a great spot. But Shane never went out over the top rope. So they were just ignoring the rules left and right all night long on this show. So just be aware of that. Daniel Bryan opened the Rumble match. He was number one. Him and Dolph Ziggler opened the Rumble. Sin Cara was number three. We had Curtis Axel out at number four. Mark Henry came out at number five. Mike Kanellis literally came in and was out in about a second. They were arguing or claiming that he may have set the all-time record, which I believe belongs to Santino. Probably still does. But Kanellis came in and he was out very quickly. Then we had Hiroki Sumi, who I mentioned a minute ago. He was also out pretty quick. We had Victor of the Ascension, which really just pissed me off because that just meant that we were waiting on Connor to come out at some point. Kofi Kingston came out. The same Kofi Kingston who Xavier Woods on Twitter a few days ago said that his dream, his goal, is to see Kofi Kingston one day win the WWE Championship. He himself does not even want the title. He wants Kofi to have it. Xavier would be perfectly content living out his boyhood dream and winning King of the Ring. But he wants to see Kofi Kingston one day win the WWE title. You know what? We've had Jinder Mahal win the WWE Championship. Who is to say? Who is to say that one day Kofi Kingston, maybe it's because he splits from the New Day and goes heel, I don't know. But maybe one day, as long as he's been around for, maybe one day Kofi will have his shot. But I know that's like a big goal that Xavier and probably Big E, they're probably on the same page with that, I would imagine. Tony Nese was in at number 10. We had Dash of the Revival in next, followed by Hornswoggle. Let's see, who was next? Oh, we had Primo. Oh, poor Primo. Primo Cologne was just botching stuff left and right. I felt bad for the guy. Xavier Woods was out number 14. We had Bo Dallas in number 15. Kurt Angle at number 16. So we had Angle and Daniel Bryan in there for a while. I don't remember, though, if we had any... We did. We had some spots. In fact, I think there was an ankle lock spot in there with Bryan and Kurt. So that was cool. I mean, that's a match that I really would have loved to have seen 10 years ago. And I really just don't have any desire to see it now, especially with all the opponents that Bryan's got lined up on SmackDown. To me, there's no real great interest in seeing him in the ring with Kurt Angle at this point. But, you know, for a few spots in the Rumble, I thought it was cool. Actually, Angle had one of the cooler eliminations in this match because he dumped Dolph Ziggler off a belly-to-belly over the top rope. So he belly-to-bellied Ziggler right out of the Rumble match. We had Scott Dawson out next at number 17. Goldust, 18. Connor came out at 19. And Elias was out at number 20 playing the guitar. He was going to perform a song. And instead, he ended up eliminating not one, but two people. He eliminated Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston. Luke Gallows came out number 21. We also had Rhino at 22, Drew Gulak, 23, Tucker Knight. Followed Bobby Roode, Fandango was out next, Chad Gable at number 27. He actually lifted Tucker Knight. Tucker Knight is a big dude, every bit of 350, and Chad Gable got him up on his shoulders, hit an electric chair. I'm telling you, Chad Gable, man, I was talking about him a couple of weeks ago and some of the stuff I saw him do back in NXT with Baron Corbin, the Chaos Theory. This guy is the real deal if they give him a shot to shine. We had Rey Mysterio out at number 28. Mojo Rawley, Chris Jericho's favorite wrestler, out at number 29. Tyler Breeze came out at number 30. Big E was 31. We had Apollo Crews. Actually, I'm sorry, Karl Anderson, number 32. Apollo Crews, who now has his last name back. So I guess he put out a reward, and somebody paid the reward and returned his name to him. So he came out number 33. Roderick Strong from NXT was out number 34. Randy Orton, 35. We had Heath Slater at 36. We had Baba Tunde from NXT, the former Viking. He came out number 37. Baron Corbin was out next, and then came at number 38, Titus O'Neil. And I don't even know what to say about this other than this was the absolute greatest thing that I saw. Not only all night, it may be the greatest thing I saw all year. When this year is over, it may still be the greatest thing that I've seen. Titus O'Neil's coming out, and the announcers are not playing this up like it's a joke or anything. Michael Cole says, you know, here comes the leader of Titus Worldwide. And not only that, but as Titus is about to hit the ring, they cut away. So you would think if this was something planned, they would have kept the camera fixed on him, but they cut away. But the announcers, they see him fall. We can't see it. They see him fall, and they lose their shit. Corey Graves legitimately could not. He was hysterical. He was hysterical laughing, as I'm sure most people who were watching this were. They show no less than half a dozen different replays of this in both normal speed and slow motion. Supposedly, everybody in the back was just absolutely belly laughing at this. I can just picture Vince McMahon on headset yelling at Kevin Dunn to keep rolling the footage over and over again. This is not something that Titus will ever live down, but I have to thank him because this will go down as the greatest botch and probably one of the most entertaining moments in WWE history. He tripped right before he was going to slide into the ring, but there was enough distance between him and the ring where he... And look, it could have been a disaster here because his head was pretty close to hitting the apron. And if it didn't hit the apron, maybe it would have hit like a steel beam or something underneath the ring, and then it wouldn't have been so funny. But because he didn't get hurt, we could all laugh. But he tripped, and he just slid right under the ring to where his entire body was almost completely underneath the ring. His feet were still sort of dangling out, but he just slid under the ring. I thought he was going to come out the other side. How awesome would that have been? So, I mean, look, in a way, I feel bad because, you know, he had to know. As soon as it happened, he had to just be thinking in his head, God damn it. God damn it. That they're never going to let me live this down. But look, you know, everyone's, all the wrestlers are tweeting about it. He took a picture the next day of him standing next to the ring. He's kind of poking fun at it. He's being a good sport about it. But this was, I would say, like, go back and watch the show just for this, but you don't even have to. Just go on Twitter or Facebook. You're going to see a gazillion memes and GIFs of Titus O'Neil doing the Titus slide underneath the ring. This was just fantastic. Michael Cole, that was the only, like, shining moment of him on this entire show. Michael Cole was just, he would not let this go. He just could not believe what he had just seen. So anyway, Titus came out number 38. Made this entire show worth it, by the way. Braun Strowman was in at number, Dan Matha. How could I forget the great Dan Matha? He was number 39. Strowman was number 40. Ty Dillinger came in 41. Braun was just a wrecking machine. He was dumping people out left and right. Kurt Hawkins came in, and we had Bobby Lashley came in, I think, at number 44. I jotted down 44 next to Lashley's name. And Great Khali came out at number 45. And he gave the brain chop to a couple of people. He gave a brain chop to Daniel Bryan, of all people, who has had a history with concussions. So, yeah, he gave him the brain chop, and, you know, seeing people have to sell for it is just completely ridiculous. But, look, I mean, how much more ridiculous, I guess, is it than the worm, right, or the people's elbow? So, it is what it is. But Kevin Owens came out number 46. No Sami Zayn in this match. And I don't know for sure what the reason is, but I guess there's been a lot of chatter. Sami is Syrian, and there's no love lost as far as the Syrians and the Saudi Arabians, and so... I don't know if it was his personal choice or what, but I would guess it probably was, but there was no Sami Zayn here, and that probably is why. But Owens was 46, Shane McMahon came in at 47, and so obviously, you know, Kevin Owens immediately focused on him, and Shane went after him. Shane with the Shane shuffle, we got the Shane McMahon punches here in this match. Shelton Benjamin came out number 48, Big Cass came out number 49, and the number 50 entrant in the Rumble match was Chris Jericho, who immediately went after Kevin Owens. Actually, Kevin Owens was great because he saw Jericho coming out, and he's just in the ring screaming, "Leave me alone! Why don't you just leave me alone?" So Jericho went after him and hit the Lion Salt and some of his other trademark spots. So Shane McMahon is being encouraged by Daniel Bryan at one point to go up top and hit the coast-to-coast on Braun Strowman. And Shane almost tripped and fell. Almost. It wasn't Strowman. I think it was Owens. But anyway, point is, he almost tripped, but he got his balance and hit the move. So Shane hit his big spot there before his elimination, which was a far bigger spot. That was where Braun Strowman grabbed him on the top rope and just chucked him through the air. And Shane had a rough landing through the announce table. So Strowman, he dumped out Jericho, he dumped out Kevin Owens, he dumped out Bobby Lashley, and Bobby Lashley went to pick up Big Cass for the delayed vertical suplex that he does, and he had to drop him and put him right back down on his feet, because he couldn't hold him up. He went for it again, and he just couldn't support Cass's weight, and so he dropped him. He tried to fall backwards just to hit a quick suplex, but instead he gave him a brainbuster and dropped the guy right on his head. He's lucky he didn't break his neck. So that was rough to see. Bryan tried to eliminate Strowman. Not a wise move on his part, especially since he had been in there since number one. Forget the size disparity between them. That didn't work. Big Cass, though, he ended up eliminating Daniel Bryan after 1 hour and 16 minutes. The new all-time record for the Royal Rumble time spent in a Royal Rumble match now belongs to Daniel Bryan. Hey, Bryan was out of the ring for 3 years, okay? This guy's making up for lost time. So it was a hell of a performance. His chest and arm looked like just, ugh, it looked horrible from all the chops from Roderick Strong. But it was a hell of a performance by Daniel Bryan. He didn't win, but it was a hell of a night for him and puts, I guess, in theory, some heat on Cass now going into their pay-per-view match next weekend. I'm perfectly content, by the way, having Cass be the one to eliminate Bryan, provided Bryan beats him next weekend. But that left Braun Strowman and Big Cass as the final two here in this match. Braun Strowman crotched him on the top rope and was, you know, making him go up and down, shaking the ropes. Braun hit the ropes, came off with a huge running giant shoulder tackle, and he knocked Cass out of the ring to the floor. And so Braun Strowman wins the 50-man Greatest Royal Rumble match. Vince McMahon came out with, I think it was one of the Saudi crown princes, to present the big trophy to Strowman. They had this green Greatest Royal Rumble championship custom-made belt that they gave to him. The green just, ugh. Looks like a giant vegetable that he was holding up in the air. And they gave him the big pyro celebration as they went off the air. So it was a nice moment for Braun. Like I said, you know, he didn't win the Rumble this year. He really wasn't involved in anything of substance at WrestleMania. They literally had him teaming with a 10-year-old boy. And so at some point, as over as this guy is, you've got to do something with him. You got to do something of substance with him, whether it's put the title on him or give him a big win in an event like the Royal Rumble. And that's what they did here. And I think it was the right move to make. And somebody asked me on Facebook, they said, is Braun's win here Kanan? You know, is it officially considered part of the Royal Rumble history? You know, will he be recognized as an official Royal Rumble match winner? I don't know what WWE is going to do, but the answer is yes. It was a televised Royal Rumble match. There's a lot of promotion around it. It was on pay-per-view. It wasn't just a network special. It absolutely is part of the Royal Rumble lineage now, and his win should be recognized as such, as should the two new records that were set. Strowman is now the official record holder with 13 eliminations. He beats the old record of 12 held by Roman Reigns since 2014. And Daniel Bryan is the longest Royal Rumble participant of all time, 1 hour and 16 minutes. That beats the 62 minutes that Rey Mysterio set back in 2006. And unless they do another one of these 50-man Rumbles, that record is probably going to live forever. I don't see how anybody can beat it. Unless they do a 60-man Rumble, they can bring back the old World War III WCW match. But it was also the third Royal Rumble match that we have had in 3 months. Not counting two Battle Royals that we got at WrestleMania. That is the definition of overkill. And if they're going to be doing one of these shows every year for the next 9 years, if they're going to do another one of these next year, call it Super WrestleMania, like the old video game, or something along those lines, okay? Call it Saudi Day Night's main event or something. That was really bad, I apologize, but I'm trying to come up with something here. Just please, no more 50-man Rumbles, okay? It was a nice gimmick once. I didn't like it, personally, I didn't like it when they did the 40-man Rumble with Del Rio, and I was happy they never brought it back, and I think there's a reason they didn't do it again after that. This was a nice gimmick, but we don't need 50-man Rumble matches every year. Hopefully this becomes a relic of the past, and they can come up with something completely different for next year. Let's answer your mailbag questions. If you have them, you could always email them to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. All I ask is that you include your name and where you are from when you write in. Tony from Philly. I just listened to an interview with Batista where he said that he was contacted to be Ronda Rousey's partner at WrestleMania and said he would do it if he got Triple H at WrestleMania next year. Do you think the match would have been better with Big Dave? And also, what do you think of WWE's total disregard for him and his movie star status? This Batista stuff just astounds me, especially when you compare how they treat The Rock to how they treat, you know, Batista when it comes to their film careers. And look, I get that The Rock, he's the biggest star in Hollywood, right? He's one of the biggest stars in the world. He's a bigger star, I get that. But they go out of their way to praise, like, when one of his movies does really well. Have they ever really done that for Batista? I mean, did they say anything about that first Guardians of the Galaxy movie or even the recent one, like, on television? Did they congratulate him or anything? And I only say that because they constantly do that with The Rock. And, you know, Batista's no slouch himself. He's also found some pretty big success for himself in Hollywood, especially around that Guardians franchise. So you just look at the way they sort of treat him in that respect, and there is a clear difference there. Now, and it's an honest question. Maybe they have, and I'm just not aware of it. But, you know, what I do remember is Dave telling the story of a meeting with Triple H and Stephanie many years ago. This was, I think, back in 2014, the same year he came back. And this was right before the first Guardians movie came out. And the two of them are in a meeting with Batista, and Batista shares the story of them snickering at him when he suggested, oh, it would be so cool, you know, if I was back in WWE and at the same time, if I had the number one movie in the world. They basically laughed in his face and seemed to think that the movie was just going to bomb. Now, maybe they resent him for the success that he's had. I don't know, but I'm glad Tony sent in this question because I want to read you some of what Batista said during this radio interview that he did just the other day on the Chad Dukes versus the World show. Okay, I'm going to read you his comments here. Here's what he said. This is all insider stuff, and I usually don't share. I'm really an old-school kayfabe guy, but they reached out to me earlier this year to possibly come back and do that thing with Ronda. I said that I would be willing to do it only if we tease something for me and Hunter to go to Mania next year. And they said, yeah, that would be great. I love the idea. And I said, well, that's great. I'll come back, you know, I'll come back a few times during the year and we'll tease it and we'll work it and we'll milk it and we'll go to WrestleMania, me and Hunter, next year. Oh, I love that idea. Let's do it, is what they said. And so we literally talked for about 3 weeks and then they just stopped calling me. I sent a text to Hunter. I was like, hey, man, I don't know if you put any more thought into what's going on. I'm really excited about the possibilities. And I literally never heard back from them. They just stopped talking to me about it. Man, I don't know what else I can try to do. I want to end my career the right way. I'm faithful and loyal to WWE. I'm proud of being from there, and I want to do good business with them, but they just don't make it easy. You know, they just don't. I just don't want to be the old guy in the ring, and I don't want to overstay my welcome. I just want to end my career the right way, and next year will be my last opportunity. So if we can't make something happen by next year, then I'm just going to officially hang it up. I love it there. Even though the fans totally crapped on me the last time I was there, I would still go back in a heartbeat and love to entertain them, and I would have fun doing it. I'd be happy to be there, but I just don't get it. I don't get that company. I just don't understand. So I read that, and let me just say, just about the Ronda match at WrestleMania, I'm very happy with the way that Ronda Rousey match turned out. I thought that was the best match on the card. I really wouldn't change it. I think it was fine the way it was. Would it have been as good if it was The Rock with Ronda or Batista with Ronda? Maybe. I wanted Rock, but, you know, Kurt was fine, and it was a spot for Kurt on the WrestleMania card that I don't know where else he would have fit in were it not for that match. And I thought he looked good, but I wouldn't go back and change anything about it. It was fine the way it was. That said, I read that, and it's upsetting. I mean, like, as a fan, it's upsetting to hear about, like, Triple H and WWE just blowing this guy off that way. Like, somehow he's not worth their time. Now, Batista has been very vocal for a very long time about wanting his last match to be against Triple H. He wants to work a program with Hunter, as you heard there. He doesn't want to come back for just one match. Although it sounded from that quote like he was saying, well, I could come back a few times and we can tease it. That's a little bit different than what he's been saying, which is he's been very vocal about, I don't want to be a part-timer who just comes back for one match. I want one last full-time run, house shows and all, and I want to work with Hunter at WrestleMania. He's made that very clear. And maybe that's just not what WWE wants. But you don't get that impression from what he said there in that interview, right? And unless Batista is just being really difficult to work with, if he's being like a diva or something and we just don't know that, and I don't get that impression, I just can't for the life of me understand why you would blow off one of your biggest stars who is successfully building his own name in Hollywood. He's genuinely a star, a movie star, has had, you know, multiple hit movies now. He genuinely wants to come back. There's no diva attitude here about, oh, you know, I used to do that wrestling thing, but now it's beneath me. You know, this man genuinely has a passion for WWE, and he wants to come back before it's too late. And I really enjoyed, you know, heel Batista last time. It's not like the man has no value. He absolutely has value to WWE. And if they can bring back Goldberg for one last run, then they can bring back Batista. I mean, we have a champion right now in this company. Their top champion. who is MIA most of the time, part-time. I don't even know if you could describe him as part-time. I guess, he's kind of on the fringes of part-time. We've had part-time guys who show up more than he does. And who knows, we may not even see Lesnar again until SummerSlam for all we know. Here, you have a big name who's willing to come back. He's willing to work more of a full-time schedule than your champion is. And they ignore him. And I really do wonder, after that conversation in 2014 that he had with Hunter and with Stephanie, and then the franchise does so well, the movie does so well, if there's some feeling of resentment there. And if there is, guess what? They need to get over themselves. And at least, you know, for God's sakes, I mean, have the common courtesy to give this man a response. It's like, if they don't want to do Batista versus Triple H at WrestleMania next year, that's their prerogative. At least have the courage to say, look, Dave, you know, we don't want to do that match. We want to go in another direction. Don't just leave the guy hanging. Don't lie to his face. Based on what he said, they were like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. We'd love to do that. So are they lying? Because if they really do want to make the match happen, none of this makes any sense. Unless they're just saying that to kind of get him off their back. If you don't want to do the match, grow a set of balls and say so. The world would be a better place if more people, I think, were as passionate about what they do as Batista is passionate about working for WWE. Every time I hear him talk about it, I mean, he goes, you know, above and beyond to make it very clear that, you know, this is what I love to do. And I hope this somehow gets back to Batista, and maybe he'd be willing to shed a little bit more light on exactly what it is that he wants, what it is that he's been asking for, because unless we're missing a very important piece of information here in this conversation, the way that WWE seems to view this relationship is very odd to me. And I think also very disrespectful. But the whole thing is just very bizarre. Jay in the UK, after watching the Greatest Royal Rumble, I realize how stupid it is for wrestlers to leave the ring under the bottom rope and remain in the match. WWE seems to do this with every Royal Rumble. Why not just stay outside for the whole match until all entrants have entered? Do you think there should be a 10-second countdown if wrestlers are outside the ring? If they fail to get back in time, they are eliminated. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It's completely stupid. Because if I were in a Royal Rumble match, I have two strategies for a Royal Rumble match. And they've both been used before, right? Road Dogg once laid down on the mat and held on to that bottom rope like he was making sweet love to that thing. And he would not let go until I think finally somebody kicked the crap out of him and he let go. But my strategy would be to either just lay down and grab the bottom rope and not let go and go off in a corner somewhere. Or stay outside and hide under the ring. And we've seen people do that before, right? We've seen Jerry Lawler do that before. So that would be my strategy. I'm just being honest. I'm not the biggest guy in the world. But yeah, I mean, if you're trying to apply logic to this, then yes, it doesn't make any sense at all. I know why they probably don't want to do it, because, you know, there are certain sequences sometimes in the Royal Rumble match, like a Kofi Kingston. How many times have we seen Kofi Kingston almost be eliminated? He's outside the ring, and he's trying to figure out a way back in. Well, a lot of times it'll take this guy a minute or two to figure out how he's going to get back inside. So if you apply a 10-second countdown, you're basically taking away your ability to do stuff like that. 10 seconds is far too short. What I would do, if I was going to do this, I would make it 60 seconds. Let's be fair and give them a minute. But yeah, there should be some kind of a countdown, because, you know, theoretically, you could just stay out there the entire time. Colin from Cali has a buy or sell question. At the Greatest Royal Rumble, having Jeff Hardy retain his U.S. title over Jinder Mahal, but what if in the ladder match have Samoa Joe win the IC title, thus bringing both belts to SmackDown Live? Brock Lesnar retains over Roman Reigns, as is what happened. So Kurt Angle would contact Shane McMahon and Paige and ask that Roman against Joe at Backlash be for the Intercontinental Championship. And in that match, Roman Reigns wins and walks away as the new champion. It keeps him strong, but out of the Universal title picture, so that somebody like Braun Strowman can use his Greatest Rumble win as momentum to get a title shot against Brock Lesnar. What do you think? It's a clever way to keep the IC title on Raw, but just get it off Seth Rollins without having Roman beat Rollins. But I'm going to sell on this, 100%. I'm selling on this. We already had Roman Reigns as the Intercontinental Champion. So it's kind of like been there, done that. Now it's Seth's turn. And Seth's been having some kick-ass matches lately. I don't like taking the belt off Rollins and then taking it off Samoa Joe after a week just to get the belt on Roman Reigns. Because, well, we got to maintain his momentum. Roman needs a belt. He needs a belt for momentum. If you need a belt for momentum, you got big problems. So I say keep the title on Rollins for now. Because to me, also, a one-week run for Samoa Joe and then he loses to Roman, that does nothing for Joe. Beth from Nashville, I was catching up on some old episodes of the Sound Off and I heard you talk about Ronda Rousey versus Charlotte possibly headlining WrestleMania 35. But let's say hypothetically one of them is injured between now and then and can't work the show. What women's match could you see taking its place? Right now, there is no other women's match I could see taking its place. That's a match that, if it's promoted the right way, I still feel, and the general consensus seems to be that if WWE is going to do a women's WrestleMania main event, that's the match that they're probably going to do it with, and I would agree. Charlotte and Ronda Rousey. As long as things keep building in that general direction, I think you could absolutely headline with that next year. If one of them gets hurt and they have to scrap the match, unless they come up with a really compelling women's match or feud between now and then, and Sasha Banks and Bayley ain't that feud. That feud is freaking DOA right now. Unless they could come up with something really compelling with two other women, I just don't know what that would be. Especially now that Asuka's streak is gone, then it's got to be the men headlining. I don't want a women's match headlining WrestleMania just for the sake of having a women's match headlining WrestleMania. And there may be some people out there who just, we have to do this. It's part of the progression. And I hate that argument because to me, the best match, the most compelling main event that you could possibly put on should be the match that headlines WrestleMania. If that turns out to be a men's match, it should be the men going on last. If they build to Charlotte and Ronda and things are going great and they're going to do the match and they're both healthy, but it just so happens that there's two other guys, whether it's AJ Styles or Daniel Bryan Seth Rollins, Samoa Joe, Finn Balor, somebody new from NXT we're not even talking about. If there's two other guys who seem to be firing on all cylinders and they have a really personal, you know, feud, let's say Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm just saying, hypothetically speaking, what if both guys get called up between now and next year to the main roster? They carry their feud over, and it's every bit as hot on the main roster as it has been in NXT. And you're building to something at WrestleMania in New Jersey next year with Ciampa and Gargano. And it feels like this is a match that could headline WrestleMania. And you have the choice between that or Charlotte and Ronda Rousey. I could see them going with Rousey just because of her name value, but it would be a tough call. I might go with Gargano and Ciampa. I will go with whatever the better match is, whatever I think, you know, just feels more worthy of being in the WrestleMania main event. I don't give a crap if you got a cock and balls between your legs or not. That doesn't matter to me. Charlotte and Ronda, though, it just seems like that would be a match that could headline. If they get hurt and they don't do the match, I don't want to shoehorn another women's match in there just because it's the women. Then guess what? They're going to have to wait another year. I'm not a fan of gender booking. I'm a fan of smart booking. But is there another women's match that I look at right now that makes me go, wow, that could headline a WrestleMania right now? No, there isn't. But it's April. We just had WrestleMania. We're still in April. Okay, we have 12 months to worry about this. A lot can happen in 12 months. More women could be called up from NXT. You know, they have a lot of, you know, talented women down there. They just brought up Ember Moon. She's new to the roster. So I think we just have to wait and see. Hopefully they're able to stay healthy and that's not an issue and they'll have that, you know, Charlotte Ronda match as an option if that's the direction they want to go in. Jordan from Washington. I was rewatching WrestleMania 31 last week and outside of Seth Rollins, the top two heels in the company seem to be Bray Wyatt and Rusev, which WWE seemed to believe as well, given that they were wrestling big singles matches against Undertaker and John Cena. Unfortunately, both men lost, and both seem to have been on something of a downward spiral since then. My question is, from those two names, who do you think has the best chance to regain their status as a top guy? Rusev or Bray Wyatt? Again? What do you mean again? Again would imply that they were ever a top guy in this company. I don't think either one of them were ever really a top guy. I guess you could argue Wyatt more so, because Wyatt was WWE champion, but he never felt like a top guy. I guess maybe for, you know, for like a month, you could say he was. But I don't think either guy was ever truly a top guy in WWE. And Bray has been damaged goods now for a long time. Now he's got, you know, something going with the whole, you know, Woken universe, the whole Woken Matt Hardy thing, and they're tag team champions now, and that's great. And babyface Bray Wyatt is something I've been waiting for a very long time. And it seems to be working so far. Can this work as a headliner? Can this work if Bray Wyatt were to, you know, as a fan favorite, go singles and challenge for the Universal title? I think it can. It depends who he works with. It depends if he changes up his promo style a little bit. I mean, I feel like there's certain aspects of his, you know, character and promos that absolutely has to be freshened up. Right now, all that stuff works perfectly with all the, you know, the Looney Tunes stuff that you're doing with, you know, all the Woken stuff. He fits right in there like a glove. But if I was going to take this guy seriously as, you know, somebody in the role of like a Brock Lesnar or Roman Reigns, I think you'd have to make certain changes. But I still feel like it could work. I do. I still feel like it could work. And you know, who has the best chance? That's what you're asking me, right? Who has the best chance to kind of end up in that spot? I think the answer is Bray Wyatt. Because I don't get the sense that this is a company that sees Rusev as being a top guy. They don't see Rusev, and I don't know if it's because he's Bulgarian. I don't know if it's because he's, you know, had heat before with his wife. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Sometimes he makes, you know, comments on Twitter and you just cringe and go, oh man, he's just glutton for punishment. Who has the best chance, I think, is Bray Wyatt of the two of them. Alberto from Laredo, Texas. I was listening to Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard, episode 83. He and Conrad were talking about the 1998 Royal Rumble and the events leading up to it. They mention riots that were started at two house shows in Little Rock and Memphis. They go back and forth on what really happened. Can you tell me more about it? Yes, I can. And what is insane about that is that it happened back-to-back nights in two different markets. But I remember reading about this many, many years ago, and I may have even talked about it on the podcast once. If I did, it was a long time ago, so I had to kind of go back and just refresh my memory on this. But the Memphis show came first. That was on the 14th, and the main event of the Memphis show was scheduled to be Jerry Lawler. Of course, no surprise, he would be in the main event, you know, in Memphis, teaming up with Jeff Jarrett against Shawn Michaels and Triple H as D-Generation X. So DX comes out for the main event. Crowd is very unruly because Shawn Michaels at the time, he was a heel and he would instigate people. He was like the Woody Woodpecker of WWE. He loved to instigate, and so he got people to throw stuff at him and chant stuff at him and all that. So they were throwing garbage at the ring. And supposedly Triple H, I think as the story goes, Triple H got hit in the eye with something hard enough that his eye began to swell up, and I don't know if Shawn got hit or just he felt like he might get hit. They were throwing all kinds of things, but Shawn just says, let's go, we're out of here, and they walked out before the match even started. They walked to the back, and people didn't quite know what to make of it at first. They started getting even more unruly. Lawler got on the mic. He tried to quell things a little bit. He said, look, if we chant his name, maybe he'll come back out. That didn't work. Shawn never did come back out. And a riot of sorts broke out with people throwing glass bottles and just all kinds of shit into and around the ring. And the show was called off at that point. Fast forward to the next night in Little Rock. This is on the 15th. Now remember, most people, if not everybody in Little Rock, probably had no idea what happened in Memphis the night before. This is 1997. It would be a very different world if this had happened even 10 years later, right? You would have social media. I mean, please, if there was a riot at a WWE show, we would know before the show was even over. Back then, you had internet bulletin boards and stuff like that, but you know, I'm willing to bet most people in that crowd the next night had no idea what happened the night before. So the 15th, the next night, is a Monday night, and apparently the advertising around town in the weeks leading up to the show stated very specifically that this was a Monday Night Raw taping. So when people showed up that night, they expected to see a live Raw. What they did not know is that Raw had been taped the week before, and this was just a normal house show. That did not make people very happy at all. And on top of that, the card they got, as if that wasn't bad enough, the card they got absolutely sucked. They had matches like Kane against Chains from DOA. This show was DOA. Mark Merrow against Flash Funk. And there was a time where Mark Merrow, before the knee injury and everything, that him against Flash Funk actually sounds like it would be a pretty cool match. But, you know, at the time, these were not the matches that people paid to come to see, right? They did get an Undertaker-Rocky Maivia casket match. Apparently, that only went about 5 minutes because Undertaker was working hurt. What else is new? In fact, the night before in Memphis, you just reminded me that Undertaker worked a casket match the night before as well. And when he walked to the back after the match, because again, the crowd was being very unruly, they weren't just throwing things and chanting things, they were spitting. And I remember reading that when the Undertaker walked to the back after his match in Memphis the night before, his outfit was covered in spit. Some people were spitting on the wrestlers as they walked to the back. I'm not sure if that happened the next night also, but they were definitely throwing things. So on the Little Rock show, they also had a ceremony. They were honoring Danny Hodge, who is somebody that Jim Ross has often talked about. And, you know, he's, you know, a legendary wrestler. He was a big star in that area many years ago. That's why they were doing a ceremony in Little Rock. And of all people, somebody decided in their infinite wisdom that, you know, who would be the best person to have in the ring to do the presentation with Danny Hodge? I know. Let's have Shawn Michaels, the top heel. And maybe in their mind, he was the champion, and so they felt he should be the one to do it. Maybe Shawn pushed for it. I don't know. But especially given what happened the night before and as much of a heel as he was, not the smartest thing to have him be the one in the ring to present the award. I think it was a plaque that they were giving to Hodge. So naturally, what happened? People booed throughout the entire ceremony, which I'm sure put Shawn in a lovely mood heading into the main event that night. So when he and Hunter came out later on for the main event, Shawn got hit with something. I don't know what it was, but he got hit with something. He took the mic, and he said, "All you people throwing shit in the ring, you just lost your main event." And they walked out again. Again! And that's when things got really ugly. People were throwing chairs. Some people actually started fires in the arena. There's one photo of the aftermath. If you search around, it's just a photo of the ring. And you can see there's debris everywhere, but you can see smoke all around ringside. It wasn't a TV taping. There was no pyro. That smoke was because people were setting fires inside the building. State police got called in. They actually had to use tear gas to subdue the crowd. Some people were asking for refunds. They were denied. So there was a second little smaller riot that broke out in the parking lot before the cops broke it up. It was a mess. It was a complete disaster. Some people went to the hospital. I'm sure there was just probably thousands of dollars in damage. And things were bad both nights. And the fans, you know, bear a lot of responsibility here because you can't be throwing batteries and glass bottles and setting fires, okay, like a bunch of Neanderthals. You can't do that. But both nights, it really didn't degenerate. I mean, no pun intended. It didn't really degenerate into the mess that it did until Shawn Michaels and Triple H walked out. That's when things got really out of hand. And I don't want to blame Michaels on this one, only because if he really did get hit by stuff, and if people are throwing, even if it didn't hit you, if I'm in the ring and I feel unsafe and people are throwing things, including hard glass objects around, I would have done the exact same thing. I would have hightailed it out of there. Are you kidding me? I'm not going to stick around for that. I didn't sign up for that. But it happened both nights, and both times it just so happened to involve Shawn Michaels, and so I'm also not at all surprised that a riot back then would have been started by him. Ryan from Florida. "I'm watching the 1992 Royal Rumble match as I write this. Good man. I can't help but think the WrestleMania 8 card was booked all wrong. In my opinion, it should have been Hulk Hogan challenging Ric Flair on top. You can probably keep Bret Hart against Roddy Piper for the IC title. Due to the natural disasters winning by countout at the Royal Rumble, you probably could have done the natural disasters challenging LOD for the tag team titles at WrestleMania, including introducing Paul Ellering during the match to counteract Jimmy Hart. Randy Savage against Jake the Snake Roberts I would do because I don't think that program ever came to a satisfying conclusion. Shawn Michaels versus Marty Jannetty, due to Jannetty mysteriously jumping through the barbershop window to escape Shawn Michaels, as Bobby Heenan said. The only thing I'm not sure is what you would do with Sid Justice or The Undertaker. How would you have booked WrestleMania 8? And I know I've answered this question before, and I'm always happy to do so again. That is one of my favorite WrestleManias, even with the card not being what it could have been. Hogan versus Flair, why didn't it happen? I mean, that's a question that's been asked a gazillion times. You'll get a few different answers on that. On the one hand, you'll hear that they had a house show loop that didn't do so well. And so they figured this is not going to do good business and we're going to go in a different direction. If you ask Hogan or somebody else, Hogan's not going to admit to that. He'll give you a different answer. But yeah, Hulk Hogan against Ric Flair is absolutely the match that things seem to be building to. And that would have been a big match to headline WrestleMania. Randy Savage and Jake Roberts never did get that satisfying conclusion that they deserved. It's a very... And people do praise the feud. I still feel it's severely underrated, though. It just sort of gets lost in the conversation because it only went on for a few months. And there was never, like I said, any big climactic finish to it. To me, the way to do it, especially if they had any insight into Jake wanting to leave. I'm not sure how late in the game they knew Jake was leaving the company, or how soon before the show he gave that notice to them. But if they knew, then it would have made sense to do some sort of loser leaves town stipulation where Savage wins and Jake leaves. You know, this company's not big enough for the both of them kind of thing. So I would have done that match. Bret and Piper is fine. I think the natural disasters at that point, were they were still heels, weren't they? Offhand, I'm a little confused about when they went babyface. I feel like it was somewhere around this period that they went babyface. But, you know, they took the belts off LOD in February and at like a house show, and supposedly it was Road Warrior Hawk who said you can't have any cameras rolling for it. I don't know what that was all about. I think it might have been a contractual disagreement. They left and they came back. That's why they only did a promo. LOD did a promo on stage at WrestleMania with Mean Gene. You mentioned, what do you do then with Sid Justice and The Undertaker? I think you just answered your question. You do Sid Justice against The Undertaker. There you go. I don't know if you... Maybe you don't turn Undertaker babyface the way they did the month before. Or 2 months before, I guess. But, you know, Sid and The Undertaker could have been a nice match all on its own. I don't know how good it would have been. But, you know, two big guys going one-on-one. And Sean and Jannetty didn't happen because Jannetty, you know, had his drug issues and he was gone and... That's why he disappeared. I'm sure if Jannetty didn't get booted and fired from the company, that's the match they would have done at WrestleMania. That's a natural match, right? Shawn Michaels against Marty Jannetty. But they didn't do it. Could you have done Michaels against somebody other than El Matador? You know what? I actually think that was fine if that was the backup plan, because that was Shawn Michaels' first singles match at WrestleMania. That was the first big singles match he ever had, you know, televised. And Tito, at that point in his career, was the perfect person to do the honors. You know, they needed somebody Sean could beat. So, to me, that match made sense, if you weren't going to do the match with Jannetty. So they were a little handicapped. There was a lot going on. I'm almost more interested in what the behind-the-scenes stuff was at the time that sort of led us to this card. Maybe one day they'll do a 24 special on the network or something, but... Even in spite of that, I really am a big fan of WrestleMania 8. You know, that Bret Piper match, the Savage Flair match that we ended up with. Undertaker Jake really wasn't much of a match, but even that was kind of cool to see. I mean, I like that card. I like that card. It's one of the WrestleManias I would have on my list. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can always email them to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. The email address is always the same, so please direct your questions and suggestions there. Follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster. I am on the cusp of 26,000 on there, so thank you for that. Hopefully there'll be a lot more to talk about next week. I apologize for the somewhat abbreviated show this week, and I know a lot of you have probably already heard the Greatest Royal Rumble review if you hopped on the YouTube channel the other day, but that was really the big event, you know, the big news this week with WWE, so... I figure why not just play that for the people who hadn't heard it, wrap it up with some of your questions, and come back next week strong with some news and predictions as well, because we have another pay-per-view next weekend. So next weekend I'll have my Backlash predictions. There was no point in doing it now. We don't even have a complete card. I think we know 4 matches so far. So we'll do the predictions and get to your questions and all the news next week, episode 546. Until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. And I will see you back here for more Sound Off next weekend. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
They have Kane in the back. This is what he said. Tonight, I will delight as I enter the abyss with a fellow monster. But it is I who will climb out alone and with a smile across my face.
Oh, oh my God.
God. What do they think this is, Shakespeare? I was driving yesterday, and some asshole double parks his car in the service lane. I should have cut a promo the way the WWE would script one out for me. Why art thou parking like one's smelly orifice? I wish 1,000 deaths upon thee. Then I could do a fucking tope, and we could fade to commercial.
Since 2007, the Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.